This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to detect subtle emotional biases in your everyday choices. A practical system for catching the feelings that quietly shape your decisions. In short, emotional biases shape your choices before you are aware of them. They do not announce themselves. They disguise themselves as common sense. Bias feels like reasoning, which is why self-awareness is the only reliable defense. Your body usually signals a bias before your mind names it. A short daily practice, done consistently, catches patterns that occasional reflection misses entirely. Definition: emotional biases in choices are unconscious emotional influences that distort how you perceive options and make decisions. They operate beneath conscious reasoning, drawing on fear, loyalty, past hurt, or unmet needs, and they consistently feel indistinguishable from sound judgment. A colleague of mine spent 3 months blocking every idea that came from one particular member of his team. He had reasons, good ones on paper: timing was off, the budget was tight, the proposals needed more work. Every reason was technically defensible. What he did not see, until someone trusted enough pointed it out directly, was that the team member reminded him of a person who had undermined him badly years before. He was not evaluating proposals. He was protecting old wounds. The cost was real: a talented person nearly quit, and 2 genuinely strong ideas died on his desk. Detecting your own emotional biases is one of the hardest things self-awareness asks of you. Not because you lack intelligence, but because bias does not feel like bias. It feels like clarity. It arrives wearing the coat of good judgment, and it speaks in a confident voice. The work in this article is about learning to recognize that coat before it walks you into a decision you will regret. Why emotional biases feel like logic until they do not. The brain processes emotion faster than conscious thought. By the time you believe you are reasoning through a decision, your emotional state has already shaped how you framed the options, which evidence you weighted, and which outcome felt right. This is not a flaw. It is how the brain conserves energy. But it means that your emotional biases in choices are almost always invisible to you in the moment. The specific difficulty here is not ignorance. Intelligent, experienced people carry profound biases. The difficulty is that bias and insight feel identical from the inside. Both arrive with conviction. Both feel earned. The only way through is to build a practice of examination, not as a one-time audit, but as a daily discipline that becomes second nature over time. If you have tried reflection before and found it vague or frustrating, that is a common experience. Reflection without structure produces rumination, not clarity. What follows is a system with enough structure to produce real results. Before you begin, what needs to be true first? There's one precondition that makes this entire process work, and without it the steps below will feel like going through the motions. You need to have accepted, genuinely, and not just intellectually, that your judgment is not neutral. This sounds obvious. Most people agree with it as a statement. Far fewer have actually internalized it. If some part of you still believes that you, unlike other people, see things as they truly are, then noticing your biases will feel threatening rather than useful. Every time you catch one, you will minimize it or explain it away. The shift I am asking for is modest. Not self-doubt. Not constant second-guessing. Just the standing agreement with yourself that your feelings are always present in your decisions, and that knowing which feelings are present is always worth finding out. Once that agreement is genuinely in place, the process below becomes possible. A 6-step process for catching bias before it costs you. Step 1. Name the decision and your first instinct. Before you examine anything, write it down. State the decision in one sentence and record your first instinct, what you immediately wanted to do, approve, reject, avoid, or choose. Do not justify it yet. Just name it. This step matters because instincts carry information. Your first response to a situation is often your most honest signal about what your emotional state is bringing to the table. A leader who notices she immediately wants to dismiss a particular proposal has something worth examining. Not because the dismissal is wrong, but because the speed and certainty of it is worth questioning. Write the instinct as a plain statement. My first reaction was to say no. That is all. The examination comes later. Step 2. Locate the feeling beneath the instinct. Ask yourself directly, what am I feeling right now about this situation? Not what you think, not what the data says. What you feel: discomfort, relief, irritation, enthusiasm, weariness, loyalty, resentment. Be specific. Uncomfortable is a start, but quietly resentful or more anxious than the situation warrants is far more useful. This is where many people stall. We're trained to discount feelings in professional settings, so naming them feels unprofessional. It is not. Naming a feeling is not the same as being governed by it. It is the first act of governing it. If you struggle to find the feeling, your body will usually tell you before your mind with tightness in the chest, a reluctance to engage with certain information, an unusual certainty that requires no evidence. For a useful framework on staying grounded, while these feelings surface in real-time workplace conversations, the core framework for staying grounded during tense workplace conversations offers a practical complement to this step. Step 3. Trace the feeling to its source. Once you have named the feeling, ask where it comes from. Not generally, but specifically what past experience, relationship, fear, or need is feeding this feeling right now. The colleague I described at the start could not do the step until someone helped him. That is common. Old wounds and ingrained patterns are the hardest things to see in yourself because they feel like facts about the world, not reactions from your past. Ask yourself, have I felt this way before in a similar situation? What was happening then? You are not looking for a complete psychological history. You are looking for a thread, a recognizable connection between what you are feeling now and something that formed it. Even a partial answer here is enough to create the pause you need before acting. Step 4. Challenge the framing you brought to the decision. Every decision comes with a frame the way you set it up in your mind, which options you included, which you never considered, and what counted as evidence. Emotional biases and choices often live in the frame rather than the conclusion. You reach a sound-looking conclusion, but you built it on a skewed foundation. Ask these three questions directly. Number 1. What option did I not consider, and why not? Number 2. Whose input did I discount before hearing it fully? Number 3. What evidence am I treating as more certain than it actually is? A manager who frames a decision as whether to give this team member another chance has already embedded a bias towards skepticism. Reframing it as what does this person need to succeed produces a genuinely different decision process. The bias was in how the question was built, not in the answer. This kind of reframing connects directly to why some people give better feedback than others. The confidence competence loop and better feedback explains how the frame you bring to a conversation shapes the quality of what comes out of it. Step 5. Apply a deliberate counterpressure. Once you have named the feeling and challenged the frame, actively argue the opposite position for 2 minutes. Not to change your mind, but to test whether your original instinct survives genuine scrutiny. If your instinct was to reject a proposal, spend 2 minutes building the strongest possible case for accepting it. If your instinct was to trust someone immediately, spend 2 minutes listing reasons for caution. This is not about being contrarian. It is about making sure your conclusion was reached, not just assumed. Most biases collapse under this pressure. When a position only holds up as long as you do not question it, it is important information. When it survives genuine challenge, you can move forward with real confidence rather than assumed confidence. Step 6. Log the pattern, not just the decision. Write one sentence about what you noticed. Not the decision itself, but the pattern underneath it. I notice I move quickly to dismiss ideas when I feel overlooked in a meeting. I notice I give more weight to people who communicate the way I do. Over weeks, these single sentences build a map of your specific biases. That map is the most valuable self-awareness tool you will ever have, because it is built from your actual patterns, not from a generic list of cognitive distortions. You cannot work on what you cannot see. The log makes it visible. When the bias is running your leadership voice, the same emotional patterns that skew individual decisions become amplified in leadership. When a leader's communication is driven by anxiety, status protection, or unresolved frustration, it shapes tone, word choice, and timing in ways the leader rarely perceives. The people around them, however, experience it clearly. If you lead others, the process above applies directly to how you communicate, not only to discrete decisions. Before a difficult conversation, a performance review, or a team announcement, run a quick version of steps 1 through 3. Name your instinct, locate the feeling, trace its source. Signs that your leadership voice is driven by anxiety rather than intention gives you a clear diagnostic for catching this in your own communication patterns. The emotional intelligence and tone in leadership communication connection is not abstract. Leaders who have done the work of self-awareness communicate with more steadiness, more authority, and more respect. Not because they feel nothing, but because they know what they feel and choose how to express it. That distinction is everything. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at imanblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Where people go wrong with this process. The mistake: running the process once and concluding they have dealt with the bias. Why it happens. Insight feels like resolution. It is not. What to do instead? Treat each bias you identify as a pattern to watch, not a problem you've solved. Return to it in new situations. The mistake: confusing strong emotion with strong bias. Why it happens. People assume calm means objective. It does not. Quiet, persistent feelings often carry more bias than obvious ones. What to do instead? Pay equal attention to low-grade feelings you've been carrying for a long time, not only to strong reactions. The mistake: only examining decisions after they go wrong. Why it happens. Retrospective review feels safer and less disruptive. What to do instead? Build the check into your process before significant decisions, not as a post-mortem habit. The core framework for handling defensive reactions to feedback shows how real-time application works, even under pressure. The mistake: using self-awareness as self-criticism. Why it happens. Finding a bias feels like proof of a character flaw. What to do instead? Separate noticing from judging. You are not a worse person for having biases. You are a more honest one for finding them. Your bias detection checklist. Use this before any significant decision, feedback conversation, or communication that feels emotionally charged. Number 1. What is my first instinct? Stated plainly. Number 2. What am I feeling about this situation right now, specifically? Number 3. Where have I felt this before, and what was happening then? Number 4. How did I frame this decision, and what did that framing exclude? Number 5. Have I genuinely considered the strongest opposing position? Number 6. What pattern am I noticing here? In one sentence, you do not need more than 5 minutes. The discipline is consistency, not depth. Brief and regular builds far more self-awareness than occasional and exhaustive. If you find that certain conversations consistently trigger your biases, it is worth examining whether your leadership voice is developing the groundedness it needs. The confidence competence loop and stronger leadership voice development, and how the same loop explains tension management in managers, both address how self-awareness compounds over time into genuine professional strength. The practice that makes this real. Here is the truth of it: detecting emotional biases in choices is not a skill you acquire once. It is ground you turn to, season after season, because the biases shift as your circumstances do. What triggered you at 30 will not be what triggers you at 50. The practice has to be ongoing. Start with the checklist above applied to one decision tomorrow morning. Not a major crisis, a regular working decision, where you can observe your own process without the pressure of high stakes. Notice what you feel. Trace it. Challenge your frame. Log the pattern. Do it again the next day. Within a fortnight, you will know more about your specific emotional biases than most people learn in a career. That knowledge is the foundation everything else in emotional intelligence is built on. Frequently asked questions. What are emotional biases in choices? Emotional biases in choices are feelings that quietly shape your decisions before your rational mind catches up. They include favoritism toward familiar options, avoidance of discomfort, and loyalty to past decisions. They feel like logic, which is exactly what makes them so hard to detect. How do you detect emotional biases in everyday decisions? You detect emotional biases by pausing before acting and asking, what feeling is driving you? Physical signals like tightness in the chest or reluctance to engage are often the first sign. A structured journaling practice and bias check questions help you catch patterns before they take hold. Why are emotional biases so hard to notice? Emotional biases are hard to notice because they arrive before conscious thought does. Your brain processes emotion faster than reason, so by the time you think you are being logical, the bias has already shaped your framing. It feels like clarity, not distortion. Can self-awareness actually reduce emotional bias? Self-awareness reduces the impact of emotional bias significantly, though it does not eliminate it. When you learn to recognize your own patterns, triggers, and physical warning signs, you create a pause between feeling and decision. That pause is where rational thinking gets a chance to contribute. What is the difference between intuition and emotional bias? Intuition is pattern recognition built from genuine experience. Emotional bias is a feeling that distorts your perception of a situation, often rooted in fear, past hurt, or unmet needs. Intuition tends to feel quiet and steady. Emotional bias tends to feel urgent, defensive, or unusually certain. How long does it take to develop self-awareness around emotional bias? Most people begin noticing their patterns within 2 to 4 weeks of consistent daily reflection. Genuine change in decision-making takes longer, often 3 to 6 months of deliberate practice. The key is not speed, but consistency. Brief daily check-ins build more self-awareness than occasional deep dives. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.